Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. I'm Natalie Sawyer.
And I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and we thank you for joining us on this fine Thursday morning. Now, with us in the studio, yes, I'm excited because he's back again. It's Alan Smith. And down the line from Ripponden, that's right, it's Ollie Kay. Later on, we'll be looking at another miserable away day for Arsenal.
But we start with perhaps the biggest game of Liverpool's season so far, and they weren't even playing. Manchester City played their game in hand at Old Trafford last night, ran out 2-0 winners in the Manchester derby. The result means City are now point clear of Liverpool in the title race, with both sides having 3 matches left to play. Ollie, was this City's most significant hurdle to clear?
You would have said so going into yesterday, and I think you would have said so at half-time, because United gave it a good go in the first half and were competitive and defending well, competing in midfield, occasionally looking like they might just do something on the counter-attack. I would say, yes, it was their hardest game just because of the individual quality that Manchester United do still have in some positions. It didn't end up as hard as it could have been, and maybe Burnley away or Brighton away or Leicester at home end up being tougher games, but I would say that psychologically that was the biggest of their remaining hurdles. So it would be a surprise if they were to stumble there.
I mean, you could see a scenario, I guess, where if Brighton need something from the last game of the season, although logic suggests that, you know, maybe they won't, given what we saw from them against Spurs, that they can defend in numbers when they so choose. Certainly, Burnley play the way they did against Chelsea on Monday night and park 8 people in a 6-yard box and send their goalkeeping coach to go and wind up the opposing manager and waste time for, you know, raise it to a dark art. You could see a scenario where they don't score. But Ollie, what struck me, I don't want me to jump on United, is he plays a system which is clearly a counterattacking system, but while they sit deep, they press very aggressively, they try to play with a really high tempo. It's very obvious to me that the United players really bought into what Solskjaer was telling them. And it was effective for a long time. However, when you don't have the ball and you're constantly chasing and you're pressing that hard, you will tire yourself out and eventually you will make mistakes. I don't know, can you just talk a little bit about sort of the calculated risks that Solskjaer took and also whether you agree that the players, For all the faults Solskjaer may have, his message is getting through to the players and he has buy-in from the players.
Well, he certainly had buy-in last night. I don't think he had anything like enough buy-in at Everton on Sunday, and maybe yesterday last night was in some cases a reaction to that performance and to all the criticism that they had afterwards. And I think Solskjaer obviously drummed that into them, and that was part of their approach. It was a very spirited, combative first half performance. I think maybe as the first half came to a close, you could see the City's superior quality beginning to impose itself. But I think for all the talk in the build-up, I don't think any Liverpool fans would have any major grievances about United's approach, tactical or mental. I think maybe they'd have grievances about United's quality, but I don't think those grievances will last very long. The interesting thing is, you know, it was a counter-attacking approach, yet how often did they even get two players in, you know, more than two players into attacking positions. It was asking so much of the speed and inventiveness of Lingard and Rashford, and obviously they are both very quick. I don't know if they're necessarily the front two that you would have to have the quality to take every counter-attacking opportunity that emerged. It's not like looking at, you know, Messi and Suarez or Mane and Salah or whatever, or Sterling and Aguero. There wasn't quite enough quality there when it mattered, but I think their approach was probably the right one. I don't think you could look at it tactically and say that United's got much wrong. Clearly, there are two parts to this. One is get through the end of the season, not just results-wise, but finding some way forward and finding some progression in these players and working out who can stay and who can go. And then obviously a big sort of reset in the summer and go from there. But I think everybody can see it's going to be a big job.
It's going to be a big job. What about City then? They restricted United to just the one shot on target. Alan, how big is the gulf in class, but also how much has City improved from last season?
Massive, and not to just focus on United again, I do feel like their attacking deficiencies in recent weeks have been, you know, quite dramatic. One shot on target last night, one shot on target on Sunday away to Everton, and zero away to Barcelona. Almost 9 hours without a goal from open play, 4 hours from a goal, full stop. Obviously that West Ham winner was a penalty, wasn't it, a couple of weeks back.
It was two penalties, yeah.
So City, I felt last night, like, it sort of touched on United sort of setting up quite well in the first half. But I just got the sense from quite early on that City were aware that United wouldn't be able to keep that up for the 90 minutes and they would fade. And as so happened, the gulf in class, I think, you know, last night didn't really tell us anything new in terms of that. The case of whether City are better or have improved, it's quite difficult to say, isn't it? Because, I mean, Kevin De Bruyne, who was by some distance their best player last season, hasn't really featured that much. So, you know, you're comparing a team this year that have, you know, in the league, have performed incredibly well without the best player from last season. So, you know, it's quite tricky. And I think because the gulf between Liverpool City and the rest has been so big, you could also make the argument that the quality of opponent throughout the season hasn't been, you know, as strong as it could be, which, you know, is another factor to feature in. But in terms of the gulf in class, you know, it's massive. And as Solskjaer kind of touched on even after the Everton game, it's going to take more than one transfer window to really close it.
Well, they have scored more goals than any team in English football history this season. 157 goals they've scored in all competitions. It's quite some feat, Gab.
I mean, these are absurd numbers. Obviously, they're inflated by, was it Burton Albion and Rotherham and stuff like that. But it's extraordinary. Though I have to say, Natalie, last night, we didn't see the best of David De Gea. Mm-hmm. You know that knee-jerk reaction where everybody in England is supposed to say, well, clearly he's the best goalkeeper in the world and blah, blah, blah. I mean, we've touched upon this in the past, but he wants a new contract. He wants a very big new contract. He doesn't have that much time left. What do you do? Can you sell him? Is there a market for him?
Well, I don't know if a Real Madrid will want to come in for him on the form that he's in right now, that's for sure. Alan, do you think he's saleable?
It's quite difficult because you look at the defenders in front of him and they have not performed and obviously deserve a portion of the blame. But last night, I mean, the second goal almost just went through him, which, you know, isn't the goalkeeper we've sort of had become accustomed to seeing. But, you know, just even if you go back again to the World Cup last summer, and there were these sort of suggestions after that Portugal game that, you know, is De Gea about to be dropped? And I do feel that outside of England, his reputation isn't quite as great as it seems to be here. And, you know, if we're discussing the best goalkeeper in the country, this season he's been, you know, the third best and some distance off the top two.
Well, he's certainly not in the PFA Team of the Year, as reported by the Times today. Paul Pogba has been named in the PFA Team of the Year. He's the only non-Liverpool or City player to make it into that 11.
Yeah, and if you express bewilderment on social media, people say, oh, but he scored 13 goals and 8 assists, and point out that his stats are actually, you know, better than Bernardo Silva's, if you look at his stats, or better than Christian Eriksen's, or better than other players. To which I would say, look at when those performances were. Look at when the majority of those goals and assists, you know, several of them penalties, the goals. So when those goals and assists were, they were generally in that immediate December, January, February, or mid-December to late February period after Mourinho left and after Solskjaer arrived, when we saw the real Pogba or the what we hope is the real Pogba. But that is the precise opposite of what we've seen for most of the season. Yes, he scored a few penalties, but his application, I would say, in the first 4 months of the season, culminating in Mourinho's departure, and his application over the past 6 weeks has been back to the same level. I think he's been, if I was writing a most disappointing, frustrating, exasperating team of the season, I think he would be captain.
Wait, you'd have not Arnautovic?
Yeah, I would certainly have Arnautovic. but it's probably Jordan Pickford, actually. We are always told, we're always reminded quite often as journalists, you know, you just sit in a press box, you don't understand the game, players know best. And look, maybe they do, but my opinion on this one would be that players voting in droves for Pogba have not watched him for 90 minutes very often this season. I don't know.
Should we, Ollie, do you want to, we need to do this every year, the public service announcement.
That the vote takes place.
When the vote takes place, how seriously the players take it. We all know current players and past players. You were mentioning Dean Saunders before, Natalie, about how seriously he took it when he voted for, or how seriously his teammates did when he voted.
Dean Ashton.
Dean Ashton. I'm pretty sure Dean Saunders would probably say the same thing.
Yeah, probably.
What did he say? Just to get some
context. Dean Ashton said, you know, you'd go into the dressing room at the training ground and normally the kit man would just throw down the PFA forms and go, if you want to fill it in, fill it in. If you don't, you don't. That was it. Very casual about
it. And if not, the kit man would just fill all them out
possibly himself.
I mean, this is the thing, right? You get people like, oh, but, you know, to be recognized by your peers. And that's what we're going to hear at the PFA Awards. But you're not really recognized by your peers. Like, they're not, you know, it's a candle in the wind thing. He plays for the most famous team in the world at the Theater of Dreams. He's got a great social media feed. He's taller and bigger than everybody else.
I would normally not get at all worked up about something like this. But I just think in a season where a player, an undoubtedly top-class talent, has really, really underperformed and has performed so poorly for most of it. And the extent of that underperformance is shown by how excellent he was in that brief period when he looked engaged and interested and motivated. That does annoy me. It does annoy me that there would be even an argument that he's been one of the players of the season. Now, this is just my opinion. I'm not saying all footballers are wrong and all fans are wrong who think otherwise, all journalists who think otherwise are wrong. But no, to be honest, if it was like a fans vox pop thing, and you know that the social media side and different players have different sort of constituencies and different fan bases, you know, I mean, it would be far less of a surprise. But this is the players who we are told understand better and know the game better. And look, maybe they do, but I don't think people who have voted for Pogba there have watched him as often as I have, as you have, as all Manchester United fans have, as most TV pundits have. I don't imagine many of the people who have watched Pogba very often with anything other than rose-tinted glasses would have been very impressed by his efforts this season. On Sunday at Everton, he hit one pass for Rashford, which I'm not sure any other player in the Premier League could do technically, but not sure they would have played that pass. It was just a brilliant, brilliant pass over the top from deep in his own half. Mourinho said at one stage last season, that was great from Pogba, but I'm not worried about his sort of man of the match level. I'm worried about he needs to have more sort of 7 out of 10 performances. When he's not at his top level, he doesn't produce those performances. It seemed this season to be 4, 5, and 6 out of 10. If you're grading performances in that way, he's been so poor in a lot of games. He hasn't had a lot of average games. He's had poor games and he's had very good games and almost nothing in between. And it's surprising that the fellow pros would be quite so won over by the good performances. I mean, I'm not expecting everybody to have the same values and standards as Roy Keane and Graeme Simms, but maybe it does say something more about what traits players value these days in a fellow professional.
Well, let's focus briefly again on Manchester City. On Sunday, they've got a trip to Turf Moor where they face Burnley, who, in the words of David Luiz, said they play anti-football, which you've already sort of alluded to a little bit, Gab. How big a challenge will that be, Alan, for City?
Before last night, I actually felt that Burnley would represent a bigger challenge. Again, that's probably just because I was so down on United beforehand.
Now you're up on them?
I don't think my view hasn't actually changed. Just going to the David Luiz point, was he surprised? I mean, Burnley have done this consistently throughout the season. I remember they played Spurs at Wembley around Christmas. Spent the entire game time-wasting. Christian Eriksen scored in the 91st minute. And suddenly they hurried to try and find an equaliser in remaining injury time. And Sean Dyche was so amused by their sort of sudden rush that he actually started laughing despite being 1-0 down in the 91st minute, which sort of shows their approach. In terms of City going there, I seem to remember, isn't there a scene in the Amazon documentary where I think Sterling misses a really good chance, and that's the following that Guardiola and I think Mikel Arteta have this sort of discussion about why Sterling needs to improve on his finishing, etc. So, you know, my memories of that game last season were Burnley, you know, making things very difficult, and I can imagine 1-1. Again, yeah, and I can imagine again at the weekend, nobody's going to be surprised by how the game is likely to play out. City will have all the ball, Burnley will defend really well, and it's a case of do City end up getting so frustrated that, you know, they just lose patience and it doesn't
David Silva starts kicking people in the midriff, and you know.
Yeah, which Liverpool fans have obviously been incensed by now and banned for the rest of the season.
Like, when you play this way, you know, you can do it. It's not that difficult. If you can, you know, you tell your guys to sit deep and try to, you know, frustrate and whatever. Other people have done it. It's not rocket science. There's different ways of doing it well. And if your players are motivated, and Sean Dyche can get them to do that. The problem with playing this way is that there's a ton of randomness in football. And if you set up to play this way and you give up a goal, as Alan alluded to, when all of a sudden they were chasing, it becomes really, really difficult to go out and play. And then you go out and try to play, and you've got all your, you know, big nasty Burks out there, and you have to open up and they hit you 2-3 and you lose 2-3 times and you lose 3-4-0. The other thing is, the reason Sean Dyche is still at Burnley, despite finishing mid-table time and again, and sometimes even higher with a limited budget, is that bigger clubs look at this and say, well, these skills don't translate further up. You know, we don't want to have a team that plays this way, because the reality is very few big dominant teams play this way. If you were at a bigger team, you would have to take the game to the opposition, and they'd be the guys parking the bus in the box. And then what are you going to do? You know, it becomes a war of attrition. So you could see this turning into what you described, where City get frustrated and whatever, maybe somebody gets sent off. But you could also see this, you know, Gundogan loading up from 40 yards out, the ball hitting like Ben Mee's buttocks and then off of Tarkowski's shin and pass Heaton in the third minute. And then all of a sudden, what do we do now? Just give the ball to McNeil and hope, or lump it up to Ashley Barnes until he gets sent off for doing something stupid or just generally being unpleasant. So
I don't think Burnley tend to fall apart in terms of if they go a goal behind. I think there's enough
sort of defend the 1-0 deficit
and then spend the final 20 minutes bombarding the opponent's box hoping for an equaliser, which
is that. Yeah, I mean,
I don't think even Burnley fans will say it's pretty.
It only takes you so far. No, it's right for Burnley, obviously. Yeah, but
it has been really effective.
But it's also why that skill set won't translate to a higher level. This is why the guy will be there in perpetuity.
But I think if you look at Liverpool,
unlike say Eddie Howe, for example, where the guy tries to play a different kind of football, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Liverpool's visit to Turf Moor when they didn't really break past Burnley on quite late and had to stay patient and could easily have become frustrated, but kind of had enough sort of trust in the game plan to sort of score late. And really, I could see similar happening again in terms of City this weekend.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This season, with your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times, you can watch every highlight and every goal from every game in the Premier League. It's just £8 for an 8-week trial. Now, every Thursday at thetimes.co.uk, our very own Bill Edgar provides 11 trivia teasers for you, and here's one for you on this podcast. Wolves' win over Arsenal last night means they will almost certainly finish in the top half of the Premier League. If that does happen, their manager, Nuno Espirito Santo, will be the first former goalkeeper to have guided a team to a top half finish in the Premier League since which manager?
I'm trying to think of goalkeepers who manage in the Premier League. Obviously, one is, I think, Kevin Blackwell.
Okay.
He was a goalkeeper. Well, you're shaking your head, Smith. Oh, why?
No,
was he not a goalkeeper?
It's not the answer.
Oh, it's not the answer. Oh, geez, thank you. Let's all bite down. The Oracle of Cork has spoken.
For once, I know the answer. At least I think I know the answer.
I have an inkling, but there
can
is a clue.
Can you think of other goalkeepers who've managed in the Premier League?
Well, I think so. But wasn't it a joint manager?
Yes.
But there is a clue that Bill's given us.
And what's the
clue?
And
it happened in the very first season of the Premier League, 92-93.
Oh, God. So now you're talking about people who were goalkeepers in the 1980s.
I know.
Which is why it wasn't.
I was supposed to know. You weren't even born then. Is it Ray Clements?
Oh, that's what I was thinking.
I'm trying to think of goalkeepers in England from the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, that's who
I am. Is it Ray Clements?
Well, I don't know,
I'm saying. I can imagine Ray Clements. I think Peter Shilton managed at some point. He was still playing back
then.
But
not in the Premier League,
probably not in the Premier League.
I remember him at Plymouth, but I don't think in the Premier League.
Honestly, I'm blanking on goalkeepers from the 70s
and
80s.
Ray Clements is the only one I can think of.
I think I've read this somewhere before.
Stick around until the end of the podcast to find out the answer. As Bill mentioned, the race for the top four continues to be wide open, as not only did United lose again, but Arsenal were beaten again as well. The Gunners were 3-0 down at half-time against Wolves at Molineux, eventually losing 3-1. Unai Emery's men travel to Leicester on Sunday, could return to a fourth, but Ollie, given their away record, do you have any faith in them to do that?
I think what would give me faith, if I was an Arsenal fan, I think the one thing that would give me hope would be the fact that Chelsea and Manchester United don't really look like seizing responsibility either. Obviously, they play each other on Sunday, but for Arsenal still to be in a position, well, for all three of those teams still to be in a position to get that top four finish after the seasons they've had is amazing. It's a chance for incredible reprieve for one of them. There are so many cracks in all three of those teams, and it's just going to be a case of which manager and which team can paper over those cracks most successfully in the short term before hopefully some kind of overhaul in the summer.
Ollie, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you're speaking of, if you take it as
granted that Spurs will finish top four?
For all that people might talk about Spursy and all that kind of thing, even if they were starting on level points, the four of them, with three games remaining, I would still trust Spurs out of those other three. I think that they're a far better team. Their performances in the Champions League demonstrate that. And it's going to be a case of which is the least worst of the other three. It's a bit negative, isn't it?
A little bit. And with regards to Arsenal having kept just one clean sheet away from home all season in the Premier League, how good a job has Emery done, Alan?
They have improved. And apart from that Palace result last weekend, the home form has been excellent. I think James Gerbrandt makes a point in his match report this morning that they're 2 points better off than what they finished with last season, obviously with three more games to go. Europa League semi-final, knocked out of the FA Cup by Manchester United when United were playing quite well. So I think ultimately there have been signs of improvement. You still look at the squad and you kind of think, defensively especially, there are a lot of gaps there where they could really do with strengthening. And I think, you know, you look back to sort of January when there were a lot of stories about the lack of money that they have to spend, the frustrations there, and perhaps having to rely on loan signings. But then you watch, like, Mustafi's recent performances, for instance, and you sort of think, you know, for them to really close the gap on the top two, that defence needs an overhaul in the summer. I think ultimately Emery's improved things. Nobody really expected a complete transformation in the first season, and it's, you know, three games out, it's obviously touch and go whether they do finish top four. But if I was an Arsenal fan, I would be slightly optimistic, not overly optimistic, but, you know, there are certainly signs there where it'd be sort of buoyed going into the summer.
I think the main issue with Arsenal, just sort of looking forward, I mean, I agree, it's his first year transition, you know, I think you need to cut him some slack there. But what strikes me is if they do need to strengthen at the back, and presumably they'll need to bring in another midfielder to replace Ramsey as well, up front, you've got a glut of players who are all in sort of that 29, 30 type age, all of whom make a ton of money in Lacazette, Aubameyang, Ozil, and Mkhitaryan. So you can't, it's not like you can sell them to raise money. Nobody's going to take these guys. So it becomes really difficult, and you could find yourself in a situation that at the point at which you've sorted out your defense and midfield, you're going to have a big problem in attack with a bunch of aging players that you can't get rid of, or certainly not in exchange for cash. So to me, it looks as if, you know, Emery really has his work cut out for him going forward, not just this season, but, you know, this season, everybody's blaming the defense. I wonder how long before people start blaming the attack, even though obviously Lacazette and Alba have scored plenty this year.
Ollie, you already mentioned the game at Old Trafford, Manchester United against Chelsea on Sunday. It is Chelsea who currently are in fourth spot. How do you see that game going, and do you see Chelsea having any chance of finishing in the top four?
If you look at the fixtures, I think Man United are one who, if they were to beat Chelsea on Sunday, then they've got Huddersfield and Cardiff after that. I think that's a really nice, potentially soft landing if they could beat Chelsea on Sunday. But obviously the difficulty with that is that in order to win a match, you need to score at least one goal, and to score at least one goal, you need to create chances, and that's something they've not been doing lately, as well as defending well. So that's difficulty for them. They're also a little bit further adrift of Chelsea. So to be honest, I really can't get too excited about which of those three mediocre teams in transition ends up finishing fourth. I know it's really gloomy, and we're all meant to be incredibly excited by the battle for fourth as if it's some great achievement. But there aren't four good teams in the Premier League. There are two extremely good ones. There's one, I would say, very good one, Tottenham, who have perhaps underperformed in the league itself. And then there are these three, Chelsea, Arsenal, and United, who are in the midst of trying to sort of scramble something from difficult seasons of transition, and if one of them makes it, then the manager in particular will deserve a big pat on the back, and the players in some cases as well. But it shouldn't be regarded as some great prize or vindication for the seasons they've had.
Hi there, and welcome to The Sweeper. I'm Charlie Scott, joined by Paddy Von Bear.
Hello.
And we provide the Times' Fantasy Football Tip Service. And we're into game week 36, only three rounds to go. What's exciting you, Paddy?
Not much, given how my team's gone this season, but there's always time in the last few weeks to make amends. I guess Friday night, early deadline for those who didn't know, but it's Liverpool v Huddersfield, which on paper looks like potentially a massacre. The good news, I think, is that they don't play Barcelona till Wednesday in the Champions League, so rotation shouldn't be that big a concern. If you've got a little triple captain chip up your sleeve, I think Salah or Mane, there could be worse places to put it.
Absolutely. What's fantastic in FPL is that the title race and the top four race is very much alive, as is the relegation battle. So whereas normally we might see teams resting players at this stage in the season, it's probably unlikely, at least in the next round or two.
I think you're going to have a situation where you have top sides who aren't resting their players playing against mid-table sides who have sort of given up with nothing else to play for, which could be a perfect recipe for a lot of the usual suspects picking up some healthy late-season points.
Yeah, and any jump out at you? I mean, Spurs look quite nice, West Ham, Bournemouth and Everton.
Yeah, those are nice fixtures. And with Kane out, it helps a little bit in terms of rotation-wise. You expect those of Son, Eriksen, Ali to play most games, if not all three, and do pretty well.
Just a word on Arsenal.
Yeah, I mean, pretty abysmal, wasn't it, as far as double game weeks go? Losing to Palace and Wolves. I have Lacazette. I may try and sell him. You can't trust their defence now, can you?
I don't think you can trust any of them. I mean, who's playing in midfield? Ozil plays, doesn't do anything against Wolves. On paper, that's a nice run in Leicester, Brighton and Burnley, but
stick to your Wolves and Watfords. Far more reliable.
Don't forget, you can sign up to the email at thetimes.co.uk/fantasyfootball or join us on Facebook by searching for The Sweeper. And chuck your screenshots of your teams in there. We'll rate them and give you any tips that you're after.
Good luck.
It is time now for our weekly predictions game, where we try and predict the scores in five featured matches from this weekend. It doesn't matter what the score is this season. We're just playing for fun, aren't we?
Yeah, we were playing for fun all along, weren't we, Natalie? All right, Brighton against Newcastle. Defensive masterclass until very late from our boy Chris Hughton at White Hart Lane. But no, it wasn't at White Hart Lane. It was at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, I think, as it's now called.
Yes.
Against Rafa and Newcastle. Now, Newcastle should be on the beach. Brighton need the points. Rafa's a nice guy. Easy Brighton win. 2-0?
You went for a 2-0 win?
Yeah. Okay. My man Pascal Gross with some magic. And I want to see Jahan Bash.
It's like silent letters in there.
Yeah. I'm biased here because of my love of Chris Hughton. But Lewis Dunk and Duffy, didn't they make some horrendous mistakes in the previous game? But then all of a sudden they bounce back. This is good. This is what you want from your team. And I don't know. I hope they stay up, personally. I'm showing my bias there.
If you're showing your bias, then I have to show my bias too, because I love Chris Hughton. Lovely man. Great guy. And I hope they do stay up based on that. Newcastle, of course, have won their last two. Brighton haven't won in six. And haven't scored either. It's not going very well, is it? They're only 3 points clear of Cardiff for that final relegation place yet to be filled. Oh, I am going to go for a Brighton win because I'm hopeful they'll turn it around, but I'm going to go for a cagey 1-0 win.
And we touched upon this before. Burnley against Manchester City. By the way, this might be a good time to send a message to everybody out there, including, but not limited to, of course, Sean Dyche's staff. Things get heated during a match and you want to insult somebody, go right ahead. Generally not a good idea to make a reference to their ethnicity, gender, religious preference, sexuality, or most definitely race. If you do that, and we'll find out if they've done or not on the balance of probability and evidence and whatever at some point, maybe, you're going to be in serious trouble, and rightly so.
Yeah.
Natalie, we've kind of hinted at what might happen here.
Yes. So Burnley, obviously, unbeaten in the last four, so in a little bit of good form. But, I mean, I just can't see City losing this one. And having overcome the match that everyone suggested would be their biggest stumbling block to come away with the win at United on Wednesday night, I just can't see City losing this one. So I'm going to go for a 3-0 win.
I'm going to go Man City to win as well. I'm going to say 3-1, Ashley Barnes to score, and then get promptly sent off, possibly arrested too.
Oh, OK, let's focus on the game at Old Trafford then. We've mentioned it already. Manchester United against Chelsea, Gab.
Wow, that crazy statistic about United's not scoring in so long. I think we've also kind of, because we all like Marcus Rashford and he's young, we've also slightly skirted the issue that he hasn't been anywhere near as effective over the last couple months as he was earlier. Maybe because he's been overplayed, maybe because he's surrounded by players who aren't playing well, which doesn't help when you're a striker. I think Chelsea come back with a point in this one. So I'm going to say United 1, Chelsea 1.
That's what I've gone for.
Oh, what a coincidence.
Because I'm thinking also Maurizio Sarri might have one eye on Eintracht Frankfurt the following week, the semi-final of the Europa League. So, you know, he won't want his best players to get injured. So, yeah, I think this could be a draw as well. 1-1 I'm going for.
Up next, this is a Premier League clash, isn't it, in the Championship.
Ooh.
Leeds United against Aston Villa. Your man, Mr. O'Kelly, and his friend Dean Smith.
I know, and I'm going to this one.
And you'll be there.
I'm going to
support Dean
game.
And O'Kelly.
I will be neutral in this one, but I am going.
Against Marcelo Bielsa.
I know, and the blue bucket.
And as I understand it, Norwich have been promoted, yes?
All but, yeah. I mean, it's, yeah, they
okay.
need
so,
1 point or something.
Leeds don't have automatic promotion yet.
No, so they had it. They had it in their hands. Their destiny was in their hands. And then they've gone and lost their last two to Wigan and Brentford, which means now Sheffield United are in pole position. So if Sheffield United win their next game, which is against Ipswich, they will be promoted, Sheffield United.
But that would mean that Leeds and Villa can't both be promoted.
No.
That would suck. We want them both back in the Premier League. We want the big teams back in the Premier League.
But this might, and I say might, be a rehearsal for the playoff final.
Yeah, I know, but I want them in the Premier League.
I
know,
you can't have that. You won't be able to have that, I'm afraid. Well, Sheffield United would have to lose all their games, really.
And they're playing Ipswich, who are effectively playing in League 3 right now, right?
They have been relegated, yes.
That's not fair.
That is how football works, Gab, right. I'm afraid.
Okay.
And Leeds on a bad run of form right now. As I say, they had destiny in their own hands, but that has now all gone away. They're relying on other results to gain automatic promotion. As for Villa, 10 wins in a row for them. That is a club record. Dean Smith really turned it around. I just think, with Villa, chance to lay down a marker, perhaps going into the playoffs. Both teams are going to go for it. I think this could be a high-scoring 2-2 draw.
All right, I'm going to be on Team Bielsa and the might of Elland Road, Leeds 3, Villa 2.
Ooh, okay. Let's move into Germany, Gab.
Yeah, so it's Borussia Dortmund against Schalke Gelsenkirchen. Borussia Dortmund still trying to hang on, trying to make a title race of it.
It's only a point, isn't it?
Schalke, I mean, I think they're going to stay up, but obviously this is absolutely huge for them. Schalke have been an absolute zoo this year with player revolts and whatnot. I think Dortmund walk it. You know, you could see Schalke putting up resistance. You see things getting nasty and feisty in cards. But yeah, no, I got Dortmund here. 2-0.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, Schalke not in the best of form. As you say, just one win in their last 11. So it's not going very well for them. Borussia Dortmund, as you say, still fighting for the league. So they'll need the points. I'm going for a Dortmund win. I'm going to say 3-1. We will see what happens.
And it's just for fun, isn't it?
Okay, just enough time to give you the answer to Bill Edgar's trivia teaser. We asked, Nuno Espirito Santo could become the first former goalkeeper to have guided a team to a top half finish in the Premier League since which manager? Now, Alan was very confident that it was Ray Clements. I thought it was Ray Clements.
I thought it was Ray Clements because he's the only one I could think
yes.
of. But guess what? No, the Oracle of Cork is wrong. Imagine that.
Now, he is wrong. And this is because Bill has anticipated that we'd say Ray Clements. But Ray Clements, he says, if you actually look at his official title when he was at Tottenham, he was the assistant manager to Doug Livermore. Therefore,
and some people say Terry Venables is actually running the team.
Oh, how could you say that? Yeah. So, do you want to know the answer?
Yes.
It was Mike Walker of Norwich, who took the Canaries to third in the 92-93 season. He was...
Was he a goalkeeper?
And had a famous son who was a goalkeeper as well.
That guy's his son?
Ian Walker.
Ian Walker is his son?
Yeah, the former Spurs and England goalkeeper.
And Leicester too, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
I had no idea Mike Walker was Ian Walker's dad.
We should say that Walker had 10 not very happy months at Everton. He then returned to Norwich before ending his managerial career in Cyprus in 2001, where he has lived ever since.
It's not a bad place to be.
He's got it made. Look, Alan is still troubling himself over this.
I admit defeat because I've come across Ray Clements' LinkedIn page.
Oh, he's got a LinkedIn page. Yeah. And what he says, I was assistant in capitals.
Yeah, assistant, 1 year, 2 months, having spent 3 years and 1 month as reserve team. Sorry, Bill, I was wrong.
Thank you.
Sorry, Gab.
Never too late to be contrite. Right, that's all we've got time for today. Many, many thanks to our excellent guests, Alan Smith and, of course, Ollie Kay.
Remember, you can subscribe to The Times and The Sunday Times to enjoy award-winning journalism online and on your smartphone or tablet. It is just £1 a week for an 8-week trial. Search The Times subscription for more information.
We're going to be back on Monday ahead of the all-important Champions League semi-finals, where I am pretty sure during that week you will hear somebody, probably an ex-pro, say, all-important away goal.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.